Matthew.
What's your name?
Matthew.
How you doing, Matthew? Where are you from?
Houston, Texas.
Really?
Yep.
That's where my dad was rabbi for a few years.
What's his name?
Rabbi Hain, long time ago.
What's your
name? United.
What is that?
Yeah.
Very nice.
Is that where you're at, or you're the young Israel?
I have good friends there. I'm on the young
Israel. What's up? Aquaman. By the way, this guy.
Aquaman.
This guy in the regular season was a terrible bowler. It came to a playoff game. We're playing our arch rival, Kushner.
TBC, please.
No, first we beat Kushner. We lost to TBC. We beat what? What?
Fish?
No, we beat Kushner. And he like he bowled like a 140, which for him was like the greatest.
Wow.
No?
Nah. I must be wrong.
What'd you say?
I just bowled a little bit yesterday. I must beat him.
Are you joining us? You just wanted to say hi. What? Okay. Rabbi Spear says hi. SAR High School is located in my neighborhood, so one of the things I did was coach the bowling team. I'm now retired. We're usually terrible. Last year. What? Yeah. No, now I actually run the COLO in the school. So it used to be I didn't have any contact with, you know, kids in the school. So we were looking for kind of interesting ways to have some interaction with them. So the bowling team was a good one. Because it's basically only seniors. Driving to Bowler City from Riverdale, which is like a half hour, you get to talk. Like, Aqua wasn't going to Israel for a good portion of last year. It wasn't me that did it, but it was the bowling. All right, I want to give a short thought on the Parsha. I figured, you guys are in Israel, so at some point somebody will talk about Tu B'Shvat to you guys. Did you do that already or no? That's tomorrow.
What? Tonight?
Right, so I figured I'd stay away from Tu B'Shvat and talk a little bit about Matan Torah, which is kind of the centerpiece of this week's Torah reading. And then if anybody's interested in talking about Camp Marashah of the MP, we can talk about that. But the guys who signed up aren't here, which is a little odd. Bad first impression, you know what I'm saying?
Can we go find them?
No, I'll track them down. I'm going to hang out and talk to some of my friends. Basically, three quarters of the Rebbeim here are my friends. Rabbi Zinkin and I were roommates in high school in MTA dorm. Good times. If you want to ever hear any stories, he didn't always have the big beard, if you know what I mean. And Rabbi Schneider and I went to high school together, Israel together. Who else? Rabbi Olshin and I are tight. He's older. And do you guys have anything to do with the Gris people? Rabbi Ben Arsh and I were chavrusas for a few years in YU, so that'll be. He has a bar mitzvah tomorrow, so I'm not sure if he's going to be here today. He told me he wasn't sure.
His family is 15.
What? No, his son. Okay, I want to just deal with one question. If you take a look at Perek Chav Pasuk Aleph, page 175 in the Chamishei Chumshei Torah, you have. This was something I noticed on the plane ride over here, and this will just be an opening, a gateway into discussing the issues of Matan Torah. Prakim Yud Tes and Chaf in Sefer Shmos are probably among the most mystifying in the Torah. It's very hard to figure out what's going on. We kind of assume that God spoke and everybody hears it, but it's not clear who hears what, and what the goal of Matan Torah was, and, you know, did the Jews succeed or pass or accomplish the goal that was set before them? What, did he make you come?
Nope.
Okay. All right, guys, we're talking about Matan Torah, and we're sharing chumashim for the new guys that came. Let me sit one down over there. Okay, we're going to try. There are a lot of questions that we can ask on these two prakim. I made the point that prakim Yud Tes and Chaf are pretty ambiguous and mystifying about what exactly is going on, which makes a little sense just because there's a lot of unique circumstances that Revelation brings about. But if you take a look at Parakhov Pasuk Aleph, that's the crux of the issue I want to discuss this morning, and that is as follows: Vayidaber Elokim Eis Kol Hadvarim Ha'elo Lemor. What's strange about that pasuk? We read it twice a year, so we don't often think about it. What's kind of strange about that pasuk is usually when God speaks in the Torah, we're told who the audience of said speech is. Vayidaber Elokim Eis Kol Hadvarim Ha'elo Lemor. It's not clear to whom these utterances that we know as Aseres HaDibros were delivered. Was this delivered specifically to Moshe? Was it delivered to all of Bnei Yisrael? It's not so clear. If you take a look back and rewind a bit to Yud Tes Tes on page 174, it sounds like we get one impression. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Hinei Anochi Bai Lecha Be'av Ha'anan Bavur Yishma Ha'am B'dabri Imach. Listen, I'm coming down in the thickness of the cloud on this mountain, I guess, in order that, so that the people will hear me speak with you. Meaning the people are only overhearing the conversation. So the audience is really an audience of one, Moshe Rabbeinu, and they hear, Bnei Yisrael overhear it. V'gam b'cha yaminu l'olam, and that way they'll believe in you, Moshe, forever. So according to that pasuk, it almost seems like the point of Matan Torah Revelation is for Bnei Yisrael to witness and overhear the divine revelation to Moshe specifically. And yet, there are other indications that Bnei Yisrael themselves were the ones who were supposed to hear Matan Torah, especially in Vayeschanan, in Perek Hei, Pasuk Yutes. I'll read it aloud if you don't want to flip. Hold the place in Shmos as well. We see that Es Hadvarim Ha'ele, these Dvarim, these Dibrot, Diber Hashem El Kol Kalachem Bahar. God spoke to all of you, to your entire assembly on the mountain, Mitov Ha'esh Hanan Barafel. So there's a good deal of ambiguity about what exactly the people heard, who was the intended audience, etc. There are a whole host of other issues that are not clear here. For example, if you take a look at Pasuk Gimel, Yud Gimel, page 174. Lo tiga bo yad ki sakol yisakel yoro yere. Don't touch the mountain. If you do, you're dead meat. Im behemayim ish lo yichyeh. Man, animal, doesn't make a difference. But then this phrase, bin sho chayovel, when the jubilee horn, assuming the shofar is sounded, hema yalu vahar. Then they'll go up the mountain. So there's a lot of discussion of Farshim, what exactly this means. Does this mean a shofar blast at the end of Revelation? Or does this mean that at some point during the Revelation, Bnei Yisrael were actually supposed to go up on the mountain, even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu just said, don't touch the mountain? Usually, Bimsho Chayovel, Hemi Alu Bahar, the only other place it's found is in Sefer Yoshua with Yericho, and there, when the horn is sounded, when the shofar is sounded, they're supposed to enter the city of Yericho. So there's a lot of mixed messages here. Are they supposed to go up? Are they supposed to come close? HaKadosh Baruch Hu keeps on warning the people not to come close, even though it sounds like at some point they're supposed to come close. In fact, right before the Aseres HaDibros begin, this is probably the strangest part, if you look on page 175, Pasuk Chafal, Vayomer Hashem al-Moshe, Raid Ha'ed Ba'am Pen Yeharsu al-Hashem L'Ros V'Nafal M'men Rav. Go tell the people to not burst forth onto the mountain because they'll all die. Vayomer Moshe al-Hashem Pasuk Chafal, Lo Yuchal La'alos El Har Sinai. Moshe says, I don't understand, God. Six psukim ago, you told me to tell the people not to touch the mountain. I told them not to touch the mountain or else they're going to die. Why are you telling me to tell them that again? It's obvious. It's already been done. It's redundant. No, go down and tell them. And Moshe does as follows, and immediately thereafter, we read about the revelation. So this is a very strange debate between Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe says, God, I already warned the people. Hashem says, no, I want you to warn them again. Okay. According to Chazal, there's another debate going on here. We're going to try to put this all together in another minute. According to Chazal, there's an additional debate here. What are Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu arguing about? It's Gemara and Shabbos. What are you guys learning in yeshiva this year? You do what YU always does, or
usually?
Okay. Okay. Yavamos. That's when you got to do it, man.
Yeah.
The big time. So the Gemara in Shabbos says that there's another little mini debate implicit in the text, that Moshe Rabbeinu added an extra day of preparation. Familiar with that? That's why there's a whole question about when exactly Matan Torah was, the fifth, sixth, or seventh of Sivan. So Moshe adds an additional day. Originally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu intended 2 days of prep, and on the third day would be the revelation, and Moshe adds a day. Yeah?
Why was Hishuvot a sixth of Sivan?
We fixed the calendar. Back in the day, the calendar wasn't fixed, so it could end up on a few different days. And part of the reason why there's a debate about this is it's unclear when the new moons were that particular year, and Moshe adds this additional day. So this is very strange. According to the Gemara, this is one of the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately, Moshe did on his own, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately agreed to. Another one of them is that Moshe broke the Luchos, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu agreed to. But this is kind of strange. Why is Moshe adding a day? Why, sorry to bring in the sports analogy. It's like Peyton Manning now is his own offensive coordinator. Like, what's Moshe doing here? He's calling the plays right before Matan Torah. He's saying, oh, we're going to take another day? So I think in order to figure out what Hashem and Moshe are arguing about, both explicitly in the Torah, about warning the people right before Matan Torah, two, to figure out what the implicit machloket is about regarding adding an additional day of preparation, we need to try to understand what B'nai Yisrael actually heard. Not necessarily what the intention was, because it may have been that B'nai Yisrael didn't do what they were could have done or what they were supposed to do. They asked Moshe to be an intermediary on their behalf, etc. They don't necessarily hear everything from HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly. We have to try to figure out exactly what B'nai Yisrael heard. So what did B'nai Yisrael hear? How many of the Aseres Hadibros? Okay, so what are you basing that on? Very good. So there's a Gemara in Makos which says Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe, that B'nai Yisrael learned the Torah 600, Torah and Gematria 611. They got 611 mitzvahs from Moshe, but Anochi Lo Yelecha Mipi Agvur Shvanu. They heard the first two directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and didn't have it taught to them by Moshe. The support to that in the text is the shift in not tense, I think it's personage. What's that called in English? What? Yeah. In the first two dibros, the dibros are in the first person. I, Hashem, your God, lo avai, lo shomrei mitzvosai, right? And then there's a shift from 3 to 10 where it becomes third person, I believe. Third person. Ricky Henderson style, right? Do you know Ricky? Right, he would always talk about himself in the third person.
All time base too.
Right. Ricky Anderson is the greatest base stealer of all time. Okay. So that shift from first to third person indicates, according to this Gemara, that B'nai Yisrael heard only the first two. However, the Ibn Ezra and others say no. There's no break in the Aseres Hadibros. Yes, there's a grammar shift. You have to try to figure out how to explain that. But B'nai Yisrael heard all 10 from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Forget that Gemara and Makos. You know, the whole idea of Tariyak Mitzvos is just one Gemara and Makos, and it became kind of like something that all the Rishonim adopt. The early Moni Mitzvos counted more or less than 613. They weren't so wedded to that number. So the Gemara and Makos is an Agadita, but it's not necessarily binding in terms of what happens in the Peshat and the Pesukim. So that's the Ibn Ezra. The Rambam and the Ramban, for very different reasons, come to a kind of middle conclusion. And that is that B'nai Yisrael actually heard all 10, but only understood the first two, and didn't have to have the first two retaught to them by Moshe. That would explain the shift in the tense. It would also explain why it's not broken up at all between the first two and the latter eight, because they were presented in one fell swoop, but the latter eight needed to be explained by Moshe. Now the Rambam says this based on his views of prophecy and how B'nai Yisrael couldn't have experienced prophecy. The Ramban says it based on other textual evidence. The question is, what is it about the first two, the words of the first two, that makes them easier to understand than the final eight? If you ask me, lo tirtzach is a lot easier to understand than the words themselves, to intellectually comprehend, than lo yielacha lohim acherim or anochi Hashem elokecha sheretz yisicha meretz Yitzrayim. No? So why did they understand the first two and not the latter eight? Yeah.
Because they just witnessed on the miracle that God did. It's a lot easier to faith in Him as opposed to giving up, killing people, or okay. respecting others. They're not used to that. That's not how they were
okay.
brought up. And
okay. So I think that that's definitely a possible explanation. What I want to try to suggest, though, is something slightly different. And that is that they didn't understand or comprehend the content intellectually any more of the first two divros than they did of the latter eight. The difference between the first two and the latter eight is that the first two, they intuited, or they felt, or they experienced through this awe-inspiring divine revelation, B'nai Yisrael keenly felt this idea that there is only one God and that there are no other gods. So the first two, maybe they didn't understand the words anymore. It was all kind of a gibberish because they were so overwhelmed and scared. But those first two, they got afterwards. They understood, they felt it in their bones through the experience of the revelation, even if they didn't understand intellectually and comprehend those two any more than the final eight. And what this really shows and demonstrates, and I think this helps us explain some of the other anomalies in these psukim and debates between Moshe and Hashem, is that when it comes to Matan Torah and Kabbalah Satorah, there are really two different or potential goals and experiences taking place. On the one hand, Matan Torah was an opportunity, and this perhaps B'nai Yisrael didn't take full advantage of, was an opportunity for unparalleled limud ha-Torah, for them to study Torah, learn Torah, hear Torah directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be taught the contents of the Torah, the intellectual substance of Torah, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So on the one hand, this was potentially, or could have been potentially, a learning experience. I think for Moshe, that's what he thought the whole point of Matan Torah was. For them to hear, and because Moshe is so humble, whatever it is, for them to hear directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, learn directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu the contents of the Torah itself. That's why Moshe adds an extra day. He wants them to be prepared for the exam with the teacher, or for the learning session with the teacher. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu is reluctant to issue a warning in the moments right before Matan Torah, because the last thing you want to tell somebody before they have a test or before they engage in some kind of learning experience is you're going to die if you do something wrong. That's not necessarily pedagogically so sound. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu perhaps saw Matan Torah or emphasizes this idea of the experiential element of Matan Torah. That the revelation is not primarily a moment of Limud HaTorah, and this ties into the fact that we stand for the Aseres HaDibros, not because the content is more significant, because we're kind of recreating the experience of Matan Torah. So that experience of Matan Torah, which is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu seems to be emphasizing in these little debates with Moshe Rabbeinu, perhaps explains why they understood and didn't intellectually comprehend, but felt, became keenly aware of the notion of Anochi Hashem Elokecha and Lo Yielecha, and didn't need to be retaught that by Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe records it. It's recorded in the first person, again, because it wasn't repeated and taught by Moshe Rabbeinu specifically to the Jewish people, whereas the latter eight needed to be retaught because they didn't really comprehend intellectually anything. And so these things, which didn't just flow as a natural outgrowth of the experience of Matan Torah, they needed to be taught. So I think, in general, when we think about our own learning of Torah day in and day out, and especially over the course of this year or more that you're spending in yeshiva, it's important to be cognizant of both of these elements. For some people, the experience and the highs that one feels sometimes either in learning or other moments throughout the day and the year are the focus that we have. Again, just the experience without the content may have led to Chayta Egel. So again, it may not be that Matan Torah was a complete success with just the experiential element. So in addition to having the experience, we also want to make sure that we're developing ourselves in terms of the intellectual content, the idios haTorah, the knowledge of Torah, the substance of Torah, the depth of Torah learning that we have, the encounter with Dvar Hashem in an intellectual level. We want to try to balance those two and foster growth in both of those areas. And I think that's one very important message when it comes to thinking about Matan Torah, this upcoming Shabbos, to be able to think about how we are growing in both of these realms, both in terms of our intellectual comprehension and Limud HaTorah, the content itself, but also whether we're taking those moments where we have a revelatory experience and integrating them into who we are.
So basically that's why Hashem spoke over all the Dibur, even though B'nai Yisrael didn't completely understand all that.
Right. What's the point? Exactly. Right. Very good. The one of the problems with the Rambam and the Ramban is, if they were only going to get the first two, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu bother saying all 10 of them to them?
Right, right.
So the point is, he said all 10, and they didn't really understand any of them, other than the fact that they intuited those first two on the experiential realm.
And the Limud was from Moshe, and that's the comprehension part.
That's
and then overall experience, like the high feel is the
exactly. So, and that's what, in Dvarim, when Moshe says, the Ramban says that it's a mitzvah that the Rambam forgot. Pen tishkachas hadvarim asher u'einecha. It's really talking about that experience of Matan Torah. Raki shamar lecha shmor nafshecha ma'od. Pen tishkach es hadvarim asher ra'u einecha. It's not don't forget what you learned at Matan Torah. It's don't forget the revelation itself, that experience. But I think in order to be successful in terms of our learning, we have to try to focus on both these things. I also think, just as the pitch into the summer, I don't know if you guys have started thinking about that. There are a couple of guys who did apply. I don't know if they're here. A couple of guys who applied online to the Camp Moresha BMP. One of the things that we try to do over the summer, and one of the challenges over the summer, is to try to continue to build on our both our intellectual yediyah satorah, the content itself, and also in terms of the experiential element. And that's one of the things I like about the summer program that we have in Moresha, is that we really try to focus on both of those things. You have a question?
Two, please. How do you first explain to Josh that all the commandments were given in one voice, or one saying?
Like, so I think that's the same idea. This idea that it was an utterance that was unintelligible to human ears. You know, maybe Moshe got it, but like Zachar v'Shomer v'Dibur Echad, that's what you're talking about?
Yeah.
So again, that doesn't make sense on an intellectual level. You can't say two things at once. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, obviously utters this, and it's not necessarily intelligible to the Jewish people, but what they do get out of this moment of revelation is the experience of Matan Torah fosters a certain keen awareness of Anochi and Lo Yielecha. Second question.
And what advice would you give so we can have a mini experience as we also learn Torah here?
So I think that's the harder part. I mean, at least for me, it always was. It's not necessarily... Well, let me say it like this. I think one of the reasons why I enjoy Ian sometimes more than Bikias is because that and Ian, that kind of, as you get more experience you can do on your own, is because those moments of insight and awareness, when you figure the sugya out and kind of organize it and really put it together, and especially if you have some kind of novel interpretation that you can see is true, that's a moment of revelation. That's not just a moment of intellectual comprehension. To me, those were the moments where I felt it in terms of learning. I think there are other times where you can feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, not necessarily while you're learning. You know, for some people, not for me a lot, davening can do that. It's hard. And other moments. One of the nice things that Torah Shirag and all the yeshivas do a good job with this, you know, the Shabbatons and the singing and whatever it is. Those are the moments where you, I think, more easily can access those emotions and spiritual awareness. All right, guys. If anybody wants to talk to me about the Camp Rosh Hashanah BMP, Rav Olshan said now would be the best time to do it.